Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining Mphasis Q1 FY 2023 earnings conference call. I'm Steven, your moderator for the day. We have with us today Mr. Nitin Rakesh, CEO of Mphasis, and Mr. Manish Dugar, CFO. As a reminder, there is a webcast link in the call invite mail that Mphasis management team would be referring to today. The same presentation is also available on the Mphasis website at www.mphasis.com in the investor section under financial and filings, as well as on both the BSE and NSE websites. Request you to please have the presentation handy. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Before we begin, I would like to state that some of the statements made in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve certain risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available on the Q1 results release that has been sent out to all of you earlier. I now hand over the floor to Mr. Nitin to begin the proceedings of this call. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steven. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our earnings call early this morning. While all of us are concerned about the post-pandemic impact, geopolitical tension, high inflation and interest rates, supply chain disruptions, and its effect on global energy and food prices, we are still in a period of growth shaped by technology. In fact, technology is being seen as the biggest counter-inflationary tool and is reshaping the economic growth. As enterprises are trying to make their supply chains more resilient and future-proof their businesses, they will require a more holistic and proactive tech strategy. A combination of macro trends and drastic reduction in the cost of computing, AI tools being widely available through cloud platforms and open source software. More and more clients appreciate the extraordinary impact of cloud-based computing, hyper-personalized customer experiences, and heightened cyber and security mitigation models on their businesses. This will accelerate gains for cloud providers and their partners, and will allow for wide use of modern technologies such as AI and data, which are bundled onto these platforms. At Mphasis, we continue to invest for growth across markets, tech teams, and domains. A May 2022 Bain survey indicated that over 90% of US companies expect to increase their IT spend, and this is consistent with what we are seeing and hearing. While there is talk of relentless prioritization and pressure to reduce run spend, this creates opportunities to explore proactive cost value propositions like zero-cost transformation and higher outsourcing to offshore or nearshore driven by cost advantage, the need for faster time to market, and globalization of talent models. At this point, let me switch gears and walk you through the performance during this period. Our Q1 FY23 revenue presents 22.1% YOY growth in constant currency terms. Direct revenue grew 2.4% sequentially and 28.3% year-over-year in constant currency terms. Within direct, our anchor geography, the U.S., had robust growth of 32% year-over-year in the first quarter of FY23 over FY22 in constant currency terms. Our direct business accounted for 94% of revenue in this quarter. DXC's contribution to revenue is now 4.7%, and given the low and declining contribution of DXC to overall revenue, direct strong growth more accurately represents our overall growth trajectory. With regard to geographic growth, our anchor geography US has fared well with an overall growth of 30% in constant currency terms. Excluding DXC, the growth numbers are higher at 32%. From a services perspective, application service line has been a driver of our growth with a 41% growth in direct apps this quarter, thanks to the secular themes of digitization and transformation. We believe that continued strong offshore-led apps growth is a testament to our continued investments in the right service areas using our unique tribes and squads-led competency development model, as well as our ability to leverage the repeatability that comes with this highly efficient model. All our verticals saw strong double-digit YOY growth this quarter. We are pleased with the continued growth in our anchor vertical, banking and financial services, which grew 27% in constant currency terms, despite headwinds in the mortgage LOB. Q1 23 marks the 8th straight quarter of 20%+ YOY revenue growth in BFS. We continue to enjoy market share gains with our key BFS customers. TMT, a focus vertical for us, continues to deliver dividends with direct TMT growing at 50+% YOY in constant currency. The TMT segment more than doubled in FY22 with 110% growth in constant currency terms, falling on from 54% in FY21. Similarly, we are seeing strong growth in healthcare bundled within the other segment for us due to large deal wins in the recent quarters. This bodes well for an additional growth driver, especially with the current macro environment. Our contribution of fixed price engagements continue to rise. Contribution from FP as a percentage of revenue has risen by 490 basis points year over year in the direct business. FY22 also builds on our client mining improvement in FY21. As we said before, we've consolidated our position with our key clients, resulting in continuing market share gains. This is borne out by our client metrics. The middle chart of this slide shows that our top 5 and top 10 clients have grown consistently, registering 39% and 32% growth respectively in the first quarter on an LTM basis. Clients 6 to 10 grew at 39%, sustaining a consistent trajectory of much higher than average growth. Also notable that our top 11 to 20 clients grew at 24%, indicating the increasingly overall broad-based nature of our growth. In particular, we are also pleased with the results of our new client acquisition engine growing at 68% year over year in the first quarter. As mentioned before, we've reinvigorated this program with dedicated leadership and carved out 5 well-considered select verticals to focus on for NCAs, and as we now call them, our enterprise verticals. While on a YOY basis, we are still seeing good growth in Europe, there is a higher impact of the current environment in that region, especially in conversion from PC to revenue timelines getting stressed. We continue to have deal wins and a robust pipeline, and we'll be committed to growth in the region. In short, our strong client performance across the board supports our robust growth in the direct business. Several capability and org-based factors support the consistent and robust performance in direct, such as our personalized customer engagement model, where customer is the center of our GTM and resource allocation, allowing for a high degree of account-specific innovations, ability to build ever-growing pipeline on the back of our effective price and squads model, capability and capacity to search, stitch large integrated deals using our transformation models and deal archetypes, and I'll touch upon that briefly later on. And finally, the scaling up of our digital competences of our talent through the TalentX platform and ongoing supply chain transformation, which I'll also touch upon shortly. We recorded TCV of $302 million of net new deals, won in the first quarter. In addition, we also signed another $60 million cloud transformation deal with the top client in the month of July. Our average TCV metric is trending up over time, and 84% of the TCV is in new gen areas. Our deals in this quarter include one large deal of $50 million plus TCV. Despite strong TCV racked up over the past few quarters, our pipeline is still up 6% quarter over quarter and 10% on an annual basis, suggesting that our pipeline generation engine is firing in the current environment. We continue to generate a high percentage of our TCV through proactive deal pursuits where win rates continue to be materially higher than in RFP situations. As we report our TCV on a net new basis, excluding renewals, we find the correlation between direct TCV and revenue growth continues to be high at 0.87. What is behind our strong TCV track record is the evolving tribes and squads model. This model, which has helped us scale our ability to service the growing pipeline and to close more deals, continues to mature. The portfolio squads within each tribe ensure that we constantly evolve our solutions, adapting to the newer tools and methodologies. To cater to our customers' need for speed, the tribes have evolved a compostable approach to our offerings. This enables us to combine offerings from multiple tribes effectively to address the typical requirements of our customers. We've also identified multiple solution deal archetypes that are typically needed, allowing us to build frameworks and accelerators that facilitate faster deployment. These archetypes are then contextualized to the needs of a specific domain or even a specific customer by our deal squads. Each archetype defines all the necessary artifacts required for the sales cycle, from deal identification, proposal preparation, solution and commercial constructs, delivery frameworks, accelerators, and IP assets for faster and smoother execution. We have also updated the definition and content of our tribes recently based on key trends and customer needs. In addition, we constituted a transformation program office with a team of seasoned large program management execs who help in crafting large transformation deal constructs, post-deal governance models, and also to ensure lessons learned with each such program are templatized and carried forward in additional programs. Almost all of our pipeline is tribe-driven and is up 6% sequentially despite record conversion from pipeline to new sold TCV in the last four quarters. Let's now turn to our client metric. Our track record in migrating clients from one revenue bucket to the next continues to be healthy. In this quarter, we've sequentially added to our count of 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, and 150 million revenue category, while our larger 50 million plus client relationships continue to deepen further. We have added one client to the greater than 150 million category on an LTM basis, taking the total to three, with the average contribution from top five clients being 150 million. All of our top six clients are greater than $75 million, which we continue to believe is quite unique for a company in our category. Let's look at our financial metrics. Our margin philosophy affords us the flexibility to manage our profitability in an environment of rising talent costs in a heated market. Gross margin grew 20 basis points sequentially and 160 basis points YOY to 28.2% in QY F123. EBIT margins at 15.3 is within the stated 15.25 to 17% band. Adjusted for our M&A charges, operating profit grew 3.6% sequentially and 26.6% annually to rupees 5,406 million. Adjusted operating margin was broadly stable both QOQ and YOY at 15.8%. Our adjusted EPS for the quarter grew at rupees 22.4, grew 1.5% sequentially and 23.4% YOY. To sum it up, I will leave you with three points. Direct growth at 28% in constant currency is well above industry average and builds on the industry-leading growth we achieved in the prior 2 years. Two, our KPIs are moving in the right direction. Consistently improving track record in large deals, TCV wins of $1.225 billion on an LTM basis speaks to a rising TCV run rate trend, with current average quarterly TCV run rate at $300 million plus. Improving client mining metrics across revenue buckets continues to strengthen our diversifying growth. We added one more client to the over $150 million bucket, and our average top five client contribution for FY22 is $150 million. 6 to 10 clients grow well above our direct revenue growth with 39% LTM growth, while 11 to 20 clients have grown at 24%. Third, all our verticals register double-digit growth trajectories in particular in our core market, the U.S., and our core vertical BFS and core applications service line all continue to sustain market-leading growth. Fourth, our talent strategy is on course. Our utilization reflects our efforts to infuse our talent supply chain with more pressures and optimize for pyramid. Our overall utilization has moved up by 2 percentage points offshore and 1 percentage point onshore, reflecting the trends we called out for in the last quarter and providing additional operating leverage for further expansion. Our operating cash flow generation as a percentage of profit after tax is 100 plus percent in FY21 and FY22. Third, investing for growth by using operating leverage and operating in a steady target operating margin band, we believe that our margin stance ensures stability while managing for key workforce retention strategies in a tough supply environment. Our EBIT margin of 15.3 lies in the stated 15.25 to 17% band, and our adjusted EBIT margin of 15.8% is stable sequentially and annually. As already mentioned, our gross margins have improved 160 bps YOY, noteworthy in a high-cost supply-side environment. Coming to our FY23 outlook, given the rising macro uncertainties, we've taken a closer look at the outlook, and we feel confident that the demand trends and the tailwinds with current order book give us the visibility to continue to drive growth. We expect growth to accelerate through the remainder of FY23, especially with the green shoots on the supply side, with constraints having peaked in the recent quarter. Our confidence stems from the following. Continuing market share gains with clients across tiers and verticals. Ongoing robust spending plans of a high-quality client base. Ongoing addressable market expansion as we extend and deepen our competencies, including M&A and market presence. And strength of a pipeline and track record of converting pipeline to TCV and TCV to revenue. Pricing, growth leverage, and pyramid support our FY23 margin outlook after providing for rising supply-side costs. With that, I'm going to open it up for questions and answers. Back to you, operator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rakesh. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please click on the audio question tab below the media player. Click on OK on the pop-up to mute your webcast and to proceed with live Q&A session. The operator will announce your name when it is your turn to ask a question. Please unmute your microphone to proceed with your question. To ask a text question, please type your questions in the text box and click submit. Your question shall be addressed by the panel members. Participants connected on the telephone may enter star and one on their touchtone telephone. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Kumar Rakesh from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. And thank you for taking my question. My first question was around the deal win side. So first quarter for us typically is a seasonally strong quarter for booking deal wins. But this particular quarter, we have seen a moderation in deal wins in that context. Even if we take the $160 million plus deal win which you won in this month, and despite that, it looks like some moderation which we have seen on the deal win side. So can you, Nitin, please give some color on what we are seeing on the deal win side? Is the momentum slowing down in continuation to what you said that the TCV to revenue conversion has slowed in Europe?
So Kumar, I think there is a certain nuance that I want to just point out. There's a base effect at play. We announced a large $250 million 10-year deal in the same quarter last year. So I think if you compare it on a YOY Q1 to Q1, you will see a little bit of that aberration. 250 10-year, not a regular lumpy, you know, these large deals are by definition lumpy. You know, if I look at the $365 million number for, you know, Q1, and of course the deal kind of slipped into Q2, the $60 million deal. But I think it's a fairly, you know, a robust flow. We are showing you the pipeline, which is a lead indicator. The Europe comment was, I think, very specific to the environment that we are operating in, especially in UK. I don't think there is that we are seeing something similar in the US. If anything, the environment in the US, especially with onshore, has been supply constrained, and I think we are starting to kind of make sure that that those green shoots that we are seeing kind of start opening up some of those constraints. We've also expanded other supply, you know, centers to counter that. So I think TCV trends still fairly stable. Pipeline up sequentially 6%, you know, almost 10% YOY. There is, you know, at this point in time, in the segments we are operating in, you know, which is U.S. banking, financial services, healthcare, you know, even transportation, TMT, not really seeing major impact on the pipeline. As I mentioned, you know, there are some customers that are watching for trends. There are a very few handful that saw a big boost from post-COVID, and now are starting to kind of see a little bit more normalization in their business. But I think that's more an aberration. Broadly, not really seeing any major short-term to medium-term impact because the nuance, again, in the pipeline and the demand is driven by which part of the value chain you play in. And I think where we are playing, which is digital transformation, cloud-based work, data platforms, I don't think there is any moderation in demand.
Great. Thanks for that, Nathan. My second question was around the comment which you made that we expect growth to accelerate in the coming quarters. But when I look at the headcount addition which we have done in this quarter, on a quarter-on-quarter and YOY basis, both of it is trailing behind the revenue growth which we have seen in this quarter. So how are we connecting these two divergences in our expectation that revenue is going to accelerate, but headcount is trailing behind that?
So Kumar, the three data points you need to focus on, not just the headcount standalone. Firstly, the internals of the headcount. If you look at where the headcount is growing and where it is not growing, so between apps, ITO, and BPO, I think the growth is really all apps-driven and also fairly significant offshore-driven. That is an important data point because obviously the base effect of the residential mortgage market in the U.S. is coming to play right now, and we've seen you know, annual declines in that business. Sequentially, that business also was stressed. So I think there is an internal churn there that you need to focus on. Second, looking at just headcount addition without looking at utilization is a little bit of a half story because given that we are running at 70% utilization offshore and 90% onshore, we still have enough flex in the system to be able to turn those folks to billable. And that's kind of the focus for us in Q1 and potentially will stay the focus in Q2. So don't be surprised if you see similar trends in Q2, because we have enough lateral as well as fresher non-billable people available for us to continue to migrate into billable projects. And third and most importantly, there is a 5 percentage point increase in fixed price where the correlation to headcount is not straight line, which I think for a company our size, given the short span of time, has been a pretty significant uptake. And that is helping also in other areas such as margin. And finally, I think we talked a little bit about it over the last few quarters. Price increases also go into that, especially onshore price increases, which is where we've led with pricing power. So I think those are the three or four factors you need to keep in conjunction with drawing a correlation between revenue, headcount, utilization, fixed price, and bill rates.
That's super helpful, Nitin. Thank you for that.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Jain from Fairview Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So I have two questions. If you could provide any qualitative commentary on how the attrition is panning out and in terms of what kind of a trend we are seeing within the company. And the other question is related to the Blink acquisition. So have we been able to leverage the Blink clientele to win the kind of deal wins we were estimating at the time of acquisition? Thank you.
Sure, Nitin. The first one, I think I called out for it. We are seeing green shoots. Still too early to call, but attrition, while still elevated, seems like it's stabilized, potentially in some pockets even softened in terms of the trends. I think that will only continue to improve is the hypothesis we are playing with, given what is going on in the tech sector in the U.S., the startup community, the crypto sector. So I think there's a lot of things that have happened in the last 3 months that are starting to play into the supply tightness that was going on, especially onshore. Second, I think the opening up of new centers is also a strategy to counter some of these headwinds. So I think a Canada center went live this month, and we'll continue to expand and rapidly deploy folks in Calgary as well. So that's kind of a little bit where the attrition is. Still too early to call, but at least green shoots started to appear on stabilization and potential. It looks like we are past the peak. Now, whether it takes 3 months to normalize, 6 months to normalize, I think we will update you as these trends play out. But I do believe that it has given us fairly strong signal that we are heading into an environment where if we have good demand, we should be able to tap into the supply pools. Second, on the Blink acquisition, I think we had a thesis around standalone growth and synergy revenue. On both counts, we are running ahead of the thesis that we went in with. So very pleased with both direct synergy and their standalone growth. And at this point in time, we are very well focused on executing to the reverse synergy, which is going into their accounts. Keeping in mind that their top accounts at this point in time, continue to be fairly engaged with them on their services, and we've seen good progress on our plans to integrate.
Okay, just a quick follow up on the Blink part. So, are we seeing it, fructifying in terms of deal wins for Mphasis directly? If you could, quantify with numbers or something, that would be very helpful.
No, we will abstain from giving quantifiable numbers for a simple reason that it is integrated into our direct business and our NCA business. So I think the fact that we are looking at significant strong growth coming out of the 11 to 20 as well as NCA segment should give you a clear indication that some of the strategies are working.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec, who has posted his question on the webcast. The questions are, 1, what is the proportion of exposure to capital market customers in the portfolio? 2, how should we think about the digital risk biz on a going forward basis? Thank you.
So I think we wouldn't really want to break out the exposure to capital markets, but I can tell you that if I stack rank the sub verticals within banking and financial services, capital markets will not be in the top 5. Pure capital markets. I think we are much more focused on consumer bank, payments, financial services, asset and wealth, compared to pure investment banking, capital markets and trading. So I think that from that perspective, the reason why we are still seeing very strong growth in top 10 customers, top 5 customers, is again a clear indication of the fact that so far we've not seen softness coming out of any capital market related ramp downs. What was the second question was around the digital risk business. I think it's fair to assume that we've obviously seen softening of especially the origination and the refinance business, but we did add new lines such as home equity loans. That has blunted the impact, but obviously that is still playing through the run rate, and that's the reason we said we will, as we go through the next quarter or two, we will accelerate the growth as we get through the ramp down effect of some of these businesses in the revenue run rate. I think there was a comment made by one of the analysts around our balance sheet as to the impact of digital risk on the profitability, and I'll ask Manish to clarify and explain that with some numbers.
Yeah, actually the comment was in relation to what we reported in the annual report. Annual report basically takes the legal entity-wise reporting and which also includes intercompany dividends. If you were to look at the reported numbers by legal entity, the previous 2 years, the profit from digital risk business was 2.6% and 8.3%. While this year it looks like 33.5%. Majority of that 33.5% is actually because of dividend. And since we stopped reporting digital risk as a separate line item, digital risk as a percentage of overall business has come down and its profitability has come down as well. So it is nowhere close to the 33%, and you know we should not draw any conclusions from that that you know digital risk impact will translate to that kind of profit impact on the company.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sulabh Govila from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So Nitin, on within the top 10 accounts, we've done quite well by continuing to gain market share over the past several quarters. But the flip side of that is the concentration risk that we see in a current environment, especially. So how should we think about that if the macro were to remain challenging over the next few quarters? How are you thinking about that internally?
So, Lab, I think, I mean, there are two sides to the same argument. I rather have deep strategic relationships where we are engaged in some heavy lifting for large programs that are less susceptible to ramp downs than having a long list of clients that are 5, 7, 10 million to us because we'll get consolidated out pretty quick. So I think, to me, I'd rather be in the first bucket than in the second bucket. And given that we are not talking about one client being 25-30% of revenue, we are actually talking about three clients over 150 million and top five average at 150 million. I think it's still a fairly broad-based top client list that we're talking about. Having said that, given that top five are growing at 30, next five are growing at 39, and the next 10 are growing at 24, of course, from a smaller base, I think the growth is actually fairly broad-based. So as long as the growth is broad-based across client segments and across verticals, I think we should be able to manage the risk that you talk about. I would be very worried if there was only one client driving growth and everything else was not driving growth.
Got it. And then with respect to fresher availability, by when do you think we should expect the utilization rate move up over the course of next few quarters and drive the growth from a fresher availability perspective?
Yeah, I think we have already seen improvement, as I mentioned, right? If you look at the overall utilization, it's improved by about 2% offshore, 1% onshore. I think we still have room to improve that by 5-6 percentage points. But remember, as we make intake a regular part of the supply chain, the number will actually fluctuate on a quarter-by-quarter basis, especially the intake that typically happens in the later part of the calendar year. So I think there is an upward trend to utilization. We do move up. We are very focused on converting the current non-billable headcount to billable, which is the reason I mentioned that there may not be a direct correlation between net headcount adds and billability or revenue adds. So I think we are at this point in time, we have some work to do that supply chain optimization that we started last year continues through with a combination of fresher intake, upward rotation, and globalization of supply chain. So I think all of these three will add towards the utilization. But there is an upward bias to the utilization number, especially given the strong focus that we've driven on consumption of offshore resources.
Okay. And then last bit on the margin band, just trying to understand the relevance of the upper band of 17% margins in the current year. Would it be fair to assume that margins would be more like towards the lower end in FY23?
So Sulabh, Manish, there are uncertainties in the environment which could mean both negative and positive. It currently be more the negative than the positive. Given quite a bit of tailwinds to the margins are in nature, the M&A charges, amortization, as well as the stock compensation, those are kind of upsides to the bottom line. So if we don't see any further significant headwinds, you know, there is a possibility that we may certainly be looking at a significant expansion in the margin. As supply constraint becomes clearer, whether it will continue to be there or it reduces, we know better whether we will come closer to the top end or not. But there certainly will be a northward bias to the margins, as we had said last time when we set the lower end at higher than the previous quarters. And we actually delivered even basis points, but more than the lower end of the quarters.
Sure. That's all from my side. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhimanyu Kasliwal from Choice International. Please go ahead. As there is no response from the current participant, we move to the next question from the line of Dipesh Mehta from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Couple of questions. Starting with the utilization. Nitin, just want to understand, why can't we sustain utilization at 78-80% or maybe upwards of 80% with growth? If ex-trainee, what expense, whether skill mismatch, or if you can provide some sense why we are not able to sustain, because some of your peers can sustain utilization with sustainable growth trajectory. So that is question one. Second question is about insurance business. It is showing weakness. Even if I look now segment profit, it is lower, 500 bits lower than, let's say, even pre-COVID era. So if you can provide some sense about insurance outlook. Thank you.
I think on the utilization front, Dipesh, you have to realize that until last year, I think the question you used to ask us is why you don't hire trainees and your peers are hiring trainees. I think the answer is very simple. We started a supply chain transformation program this time last year. I talked about the fact that we put 5,500 freshers for the first time in that large proportion of our overall workforce in the last 2 quarters, 22. And that's the change management program that we're running internally. We did guide that utilization will stay low for a period of time as we absorb these. You have already answered part of that question, because we have a significant portion of our business that comes from transformation programs. The ability to deploy, the ability to absorb them in those strategic change programs, I think that's a long-winded cycle, and that's what we're for. Many of our peers had been on this journey longer. We were not able to go on this journey much longer because we had over FY 20, 21, and 22, we were obviously bringing, you know, people our DXC book of business into direct as they were ramping down, and we couldn't really afford to run a fairly, you know, more than the amount of bench that we ran in that period. So I think this is a I would say kind of a transition phase for us to transition into a much more pyramid-driven supply organization, something that is very important for our long-term scalability and growth. And I think we have to, you know, build the business with what works for us and what you know, what's the best supply chain strategy we can run. And in that context, I think we will utilization numbers that will be higher, and we will create a virtuous cycle out of the upward rotation and migration. You know, we are fully there yet because we just started the process 2 or 3 quarters ago.
On the insurance question, Dipesh, you see, despite a 3% decline quarter on quarter, we delivered a 22.8% growth on a basis, which basically means that last quarter we had some significant upsides as, you know, some of the milestones got achieved. I would not look into it, you know, as a see that as a trend. The margin movement between last quarter to this quarter is just a reflection of milestone revenues accounting and nothing more than that. At the pipeline level and as a quality of business, you know, both sides, I think insurance continues to have decent visibility. And if you go 2-3 quarters back, you would have seen that the insurance business would have not looked as good as it looks today. And it should look better as we go forward. The only other point I would make is numbers do get impacted by what happens to the DXC side of business, and there is a bit of insurance business in DXC which impacts the reported numbers as well.
Understood. Just follow up on the first part. I was referring largely ex-trainee kind of thing, but broadly I get the sense in terms of the overall training related thing, and maybe business mix changing is some implication. The last part, if maybe I can squeeze one question about mortgage business, which partly you addressed. But in your opinion, this weakness for mortgage business will last for how long? Or we largely bottom out in Q1? Thank you.
That is very hard to forecast because the environment is fairly fluid on that front. The rates are very volatile. You can look at the 10-year treasury U.S. and see how much volatility there exists, and the yield moves up or down by 50 bps within a one-week period. I think until the volatility subsides, I don't think we will see the peaking of mortgage rates. But the HELOC market is still pretty strong, and we still have backlogs and volumes that we are consuming. We've again reached the operation to be able to consume resources on both sides, and we've also added some new service lines, especially around compliance. And as well as servicing. So I think this will, you know, we used the last downturn in 2018-19 to grow this business, consolidate our position, and we're doing the same as we speak, you know, given. And I think the business is obviously, you know, is in a much better shape than it was 2 years, 3 years ago. But from a portfolio perspective, it is still something that adds a lot of strategic value. So we'll continue to watch it. We continue to believe, you know, as the effect runs through the run rate, our overall direct growth will continue to accelerate for the rest of the year. And that's kind of the working with as of now.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Shindadkar from InCred Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on this quarter. In your prepared remarks, you made a comment about the increased focus on RTD spend. You know,
so if you can,
you're not very clear. You're not very clear. Yeah, please. Much better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My apologies. So in the prepared remarks, you made a comment about increased focus on RTB spend. So does this create headwinds for volume growth, you know, given automation focus in the RTB spend by clients? Any color could be helpful. Thank you for taking my question.
Sure, Abhishek. I think as I mentioned, right, it is not just important to look at demand overall. It is important demand in context to the service lines and the value chain that a company is operating in. The fairly unique time and a fairly different environment, even if you head into a slowdown or a recession, the playbook of 2008-09 or 2000-2001 on not going to stand up, because what used to be stable in those time periods only at, you know, the most at risk in this environment, because the biggest leverage all of our enterprise clients did is to accelerate the exit from legacy and free up those sunk costs and capex investments. So as you see, you know, if you look at demand, and if you happen to be a company that is focused on infrastructure services, the center operations, service desk, you will see significant headwinds, because those projects will get accelerated from a exit perspective. If you are a company that is focused on transformation or change the business, or the migration from OpEx or bundle run and change through a zero cost transformation construct like we do, then you potentially are at a point where demand is probably you know, the least likely to suffer. So I think that's the way you should think about what happens to the portfolio, demand in context of the portfolio.
Got that. And just another clarification, if you can help us understand that if a client is on a cloud journey, say from calendar year 20, you know, what proportion of his spends would become, you know, traditional or, you know, would go into the maintenance portfolio, let's say in a year two or year three. I mean, the where I'm coming from is trying to understand, you know, what portion of the revenue for IT companies becomes, you know, goes into the maintenance part, which could be, you know, up for renewal in the cloud journey.
Abhishek, it's too soon to actually start counting that because the way you ran applications is, you know, in a data center environment, even if you are running, you know, AMS, or of course you bundle AMS with IMS and whatever was AD, that construct, that equation is actually changing very rapidly. The way you run applications that sit on the cloud, actually highly digitized, highly automated cloud ops mindset, it is very much through a tool chain, you know, through through orchestration and software tools. So I think that equation is still being formed. The big disruption and the biggest change really is the more clients start switching off data centers and infrastructure environments, the more money becomes available to them to spend on change, and the faster the change accelerates because that's an in-year spend away. And I think that's the equation we are playing on right now. At this point in time, I think it's too early to see what the split of, you know, cloud applications management versus traditional application management will look like. All I can tell you is many transformation programs are still in very early stages of application transformation using cloud. Data is picking up steam now. Core transformations haven't yet fully started, even though they started to nibble using things like neobanking or digital. So I think this is a macro headwind blip in an early stage of a very large pivot. And that's the reason why I think at a secular level, this tech pivot is here to stay for a while.
Great, sir. Thank you for answering my questions. And best wishes for 23.
Thank you, Abhishek.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Debashish Majumdar from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you very much for taking my question. So I have most of my questions have been answered. I have one query. And so if we see that the transaction-based line item that we have, which is around 15-16% of our business, just wanted to get some sense how much of this business is coming from mortgage-related activity and how much is related to others.
So Debashish, Manish here. Transaction-based business is a combination of what we do in mortgage and a lot more than that. Including in the application side of things, there are contracts where we actually commit to delivering specific transactions as an outcome. As we have mentioned earlier, it's extremely hard for us to call out a digital risk as a separate source of revenue because it is very much an integrated offer, to speak. So I won't be able to give you a number in that, number. Much is digital risk, but it is a subset of that number. So, you know, you should get a sense of how much the digital risk business at max could be.
Okay, so for our modeling, should we assume like it is like 70-80% of this business is digital risk type business?
Devashish, is difficult, like I said. I won't recommend you make like that for the purpose of the modeling. I mean, unfortunately, despite this question coming up again and again, it is not because we don't want to share, it's just that the model doesn't allow us to provide number anymore.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Nitin, Manish. Nitin, sorry to harp again on the DR mortgage business. But if you look at, and I think you very rightly said the environment remains very, very fluid. And if you look at, you know, your direct business, you know, after many quarters of very, very strong growth, this quarter was a little bit relatively weaker in terms of the performance if you look both on QQ and YOY basis. You know, was a majority of the relative weakness this quarter in direct was on account of DR, or were there other factors which are also contributing? And also, you know, in within DR, you have been talking about operations and compliance as, you know, potential opportunities. What portion of DR are they currently, and you know, can they be big enough in a few quarters to kind of, you know, overpower the processing part, which remains weak?
So, Mukul, I think firstly, just to correct data points, on a YOY basis, we grew 28.3%. And I think the number is fairly, say, you know, top of the charts in terms of performance compared to the industry. On a actual basis, I think the run rate impact of the mortgage, I will call it the mortgage LOB, and you call it DR, because we don't really have that nomenclature internally anymore. The mortgage LOB was one of the reasons why we called for the Q1 number to be, you know, in the range that it ended up being, because we did call for short-term weakness, and I think there's still some more rounded impact that is going to wash through that. But the fact that we are calling for demand, you know, visibility, order book, TCV, pipeline-led inflation of growth through the remainder of the quarters, that comes from the fact that in our core market, you think, you know, as well as applications, outsourcing, transformation, we are seeing growth 30 to 40%. Right? US grew 32% direct, apps grew 41% direct, and the pipeline is actually fairly geared towards that. So I think that's in my books, that is where the highest quality of growth sits, and that's where we are actually fairly convinced that the pipeline and the order book will actually drive that growth, especially as the supply situation starts to stabilize over the next couple of quarters. In addition to the mortgage LOB, other weakness came out of the Europe business, where the ramp downs were extended out, even though on a YOY basis grew, but it didn't really keep up with the growth of the direct business. And that's another area of work for us to continue to make sure that not only are we winning more, but we're actually executing faster, despite all the constraints that we are seeing in some of those markets. I think a combination of those two things, but a large impact definitely from the mortgage LOB. On the second question, internals of the mortgage LOB, I think at this point in time, it's fair to say that interest rate sensitive driven, you know, refi is less than half the business, which used to be majority of the 5 years ago.
Correct. Thanks. The other question, Nathan, I was just trying to, you know, make sense of the commentary which is coming out of your top client. You know, till a few quarters back, they were extremely positive on their technology plans over the medium term. But, you know, of late, they have expressed concerns about how the market and, you know, the economy is behaving. You know, while you might not want to comment on their expanding plans, just wanted to, you know, kind of get some sense of, you know, how do you see your exposure in terms of defensibility versus, and you mentioned that, you know, the capital market is outside top five, so that's probably you don't have much exposure there, but how defensible or sustainable is your exposure to them?
Are you talking about or top clients?
Top client. Number one client.
We never confirmed who the top client. Difficult for me to give you an answer because I don't know who you're talking about. And you're assuming that you know who the top is. But I'll tell you, the metric you have to see is the top five and top 10 growth. The deal that we are announcing is also coming from one of our top five clients. The $60 million announced that we closed in July. So, of course, it is unstable. We don't know what they will say, you know, in terms of the banking sector outlook, in terms of, you know, because the number of happen to be large U.S. banks or financial service institutions. So I think at this point in time, we are not seeing the hurricanes that you're worried about. We are really focused on driving as much consumption as we can from the order book, and we are still winning share. In fact, in some of these top clients, net new change digital spend, we are actually winning almost 60%.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take questions received on webcast. The next question is from the line of Divyesh Mehta from Investec. Investec, his question is, one, what is the outlook for digital risk business? How do we how much did digital risk degrew during the quarter? Second, what has aided margins despite the sharp drop in the utilization? Has the increase in on-site utilization completely offset the lower offshore utilization? Three, any color on margin headwinds and tailwinds for FY23? Thank you.
Hi, Divyesh. Manish here. As I mentioned earlier, we don't give the digital risk business number separately. So we would hence not also be able to give what was the movement in digital risk on a quarter-on-quarter basis. From a margin perspective, if you look at quarter-on-quarter movement, actually there is an improvement in margin utilization both offshore and on-site. It's not that the on-site margin utilization improvement was kind of helping manage the offshore utilization. Offshore utilization improved 2% and on-site improved by 1% points. There are puts and takes on margins to your other question. Price increase is one tailwind that we are. Offshore-led apps growth, both of which drive better profits, better realizations, is the second. Utilization improvement, though 2% and 1% is the third one. And as we speak, we are continuing to work on pyramid correction, which is pressure induction. And that reduces the average cost, and that also has a tailwind on the bottom. These are what has been in the play right now. Other than the amortization cost reduction of M&A charges and the stock compensation, will continue for a few more quarters to come.
Thank
we can probably
you.
Take
should we move on?
Yeah, we can go to the next question probably.
Yeah, the next question is from the line of Vaibhav Gobate from Ashmore. The question is, one, can you give revenue growth guidance for FY23? Two, what is the digital risk as percentage of revenue in current quarter? Thank you.
So the answers remain same. We don't have that number called out separately. On the overall revenue growth for the year, Nitin mentioned in his opening remarks, momentum continues. Philosophy for investing in growth while maintaining profitability continues to be there. We don't call out any numbers or any specific dollar value for the revenue for the year. Otherwise, we continue to believe that we will from the pipeline TCV wins that we have had, including the $302 million in Q1 plus the $60 million plus deal that we signed in July. We can go to the next question. I think there is one from Mohit as well.
Yes. The question from Mohit Jain is, he's from Anand Rathi. The question is, how big is the BPO mortgage business for us and how do you see it progress through the year? Can it potentially impact our direct business growth for FY23? Any trends here would be helpful. Thank you.
So like I mentioned earlier, we don't call out the number specifically. Last quarter, talked about the fact that we are seeing headwinds in this business. Some of it had already impacted Q3 numbers. Some of it impacted Q4. And it certainly had impacted Q1 numbers as well. The complementary services that we have built and Nitin's comment around our ability to now take volumes in HELOC, we don't expect it to have any material impact on the numbers as we go forward.
I think, guys, I just want to make a comment that, you know, there are almost everybody wants to know a number or a percentage of revenue. I think it's extremely hard because a lot of these lines are integrated into everything we do. Building out the platform to building, you know, the data to doing the underwriting, putting regulatory compliance. It's very hard for us to continue to, you know, to demarcate, you know, service line contract by contract. So it's not that we are not, you know, we're trying to be elusive. It's just that it's hard to estimate because whichever we give, you know, it's actually going to be inaccurate given the way the business is integrated. I think there is obviously concerns coming out of the environment. I think the large part of the run rate impact we've already seen, 50% decline in volumes is the headline number that you guys saw on the U.S. New originations, not our industry, now not our number, but the industry number. So obviously, you know, a lot of that impact has despite that impact, on a tough comp basis, we've grown our banking business in the high 20s, 28%. That should give you a sense that the business is much more broad-based than you guys are worrying about right now. I think this is not, you know, this is not an environment where we have a significant portion of revenue at risk, unlike what we had with another situation years ago, where I think the focus used to be on that one client, which was, you know, committed for a 5-year. This is a very different situation. So my request will be to not equate this environment with what happened 3 years ago, which we, by the way, also had, you know, quite well in the last 2 years. So I think focus on where the quality of growth from, focus on the pipeline and conversion rates, focus on growth, which is, again, despite having, you know, this business represented in many of those top clients, top 10 accounts have grown 30%. And that's a metric that you guys need to focus on.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devang Bhatt from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I have just one question. Your on-site BPO headcount has declined on QoQ basis. Can you help me with that?
I think it's basically links to the internals changing from the declines mostly came from the mortgage business that obviously we talked about quite extensively in the last 60 minutes. And there's basically a correlation between what you're seeing in the BPO onshore numbers and overall company growth mix.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I think somewhere you commented about the tailwind on the margin which you may have. So any bit color in terms of what all could be those factors? One, of course, is currency, and our median remuneration last year was also high relatively. So is that what is an incremental thing with softening, relatively softening of the supply side problem and remuneration already being high for us on the portfolio basis? Is those the thing other than currency that you have?
So Rahul, Manish, you know, the primary ones that we talked about is the tailwind of price increase, the tailwind of the potential opportunity to expand utilization, the growth coming from and an offshore-centric revenue, which both basically come with higher margins, and the stock compensation and M&A charges that has been given continue to decline in absolute terms, actually decline even faster on the percentage terms. And beyond this, there are initiatives being taken, including starting to invest in building the fresher muscle, which had kind of put to rest for some time, given we were trying to redeploy colleagues coming out of the DXE decline. And that also, as it kicks in, should start giving us operational margin tailwinds.
Yeah. So, of course, these things you alluded, what I was asking is that only on the purely on the salary side of it, can we say that our base right now, the changes that we might have made last year are so adequate that that would not be a big headwind to us, or it would be a similar cycle this year as well?
Compensation as a philosophy, Nitin talked about us using Talent Next and the Geek Quotient, where upgrade in the skills translating to increased billability automatically translates to an compensation. And that's a perpetual continuous cycle. So, you know, and as you would relate to it, it's a virtual, because we pay more if we make more. So I don't think it will be a once in a year kind of an event. And given the way it is conducted, it create a margin headwind, so to speak.
Right, right. And just one follow-up for Nitin. I mean, the way you are articulating, is it safer to assume the positioning that we have with our client and the kind of size of the business we have and whatever macro reading we have right now, we can continue to deliver the same growth that we might be thinking, let's say, 6-7 months back for our business for this year and year to come?
Yeah, I think at this point, we are not really changing, any of our stance, either on growth or on the tailwinds that Manish just talked about on the margin side. So I think it requires us to stay focused on executing what we have at hand, and of course, expand our wallet share further, because we do believe that there will be opportunities in the next 2 to 4 quarters, actual further consolidation with our existing client base as they start thinking about a set of partners that can actually help them further their agenda on transformation.
Right. I appreciate the color. Thanks a lot and best of luck.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participant, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitin Rakesh for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
I just want to thank you all for continued interest in Mphasis and your sustained investment in time and effort. I think we are very focused driving our clients towards the future that they're all building towards. And we believe, as I mentioned, that we meet opportunities in the near to medium term to further consolidate our position with many of our clients, both, and we stay focused on executing to that vision. So thank you again, and we look forward to talking to you next quarter.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Mphasis Limited, that concludes this conference. If you have any further questions, please reach out to Mphasis Investor Relations team on investor.relations@mphasis.com. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.